The future is unpredictable at times, but the Open University are the experts in distance learning, allowing you to fit study around your life. What's more, you'll have support from dedicated tutors every step of the way. Now, suddenly your possibilities are open. Search the Open University to find out more. The Open University. The future is open.
When it comes to finding great deals on mobiles, we've gone beyond expectations at Currys. Maybe you want the latest Google Pixel 7 Pro. We've got all the latest models on the award-winning ID Mobile and Vodafone networks. Maybe you want a better deal. We've got deals on data, trade-ins, cashback and more. See for yourself at your local Currys in Tottenham Court Road. And if you want free next day delivery, look online at carphonewarehouse.com. Order before 8 p.m. for free next day delivery in most areas, subject to availability. Excludes bank holidays.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who in a concert you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the first episode of Dig Deep. Yeah. If I could sing, it would be long for everyone. I'm telling you, it would be so long. But this is the episode where myself and Leanne give you an insight into the sisterhood we are creating and have created. We're going to be asking each other a few questions that neither of us know what the other person has planned. But it's basically a chance for us to grow closer to each other whilst having to answer sometimes some uncomfortable questions. But before we get into all of that, Leanne, how are you?
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like you were traveling, I was traveling, and even though we're still, when we come back to this space, we're still in different countries, it felt very different. Like our schedules are so haphazard whenever we're both traveling. But yeah, I'm good. I'm glad to be back home, which is something that I don't often say because I love traveling so much. Mm-hmm. But it was a hectic, busy time. I was traveling for work and I missed you. I was just thinking on before we started recording or this morning, earlier this morning, I was like, I cannot wait for Roshan to get to Jamaica because it just feels like we're going to have a nice time where we're not talking about work and we're just going to enjoy ourselves.
It's nice because it'll be the first time us both being in the same home country because I'm obviously not from England. Yeah, I know you guys are probably wondering, this accent sounds British. Now I was born and bred in Jamaica and I'll be returning back. So yeah, we'll both be on the motherland soil.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me. Wait, you were on holiday too, though. Where did you... You told me you were leaving on holiday and then I feel like you just disappeared for 5 days. How was Barcelona? Because I've never actually been.
So it was good. This is my second time going. It was definitely a different vibe. I went to party a little bit, try and de-stress, have let my hair down, all that good stuff. But I must tell you the story quickly, yeah? I was in Barcelona at the bar at this event. This event was a black event, okay? There was a lot of UK people that had come over for the event. I'm not going to mention the event only because the story is a negative story and it's not a reflection of the wider actual event that I had. So we're at the event at the bar and these black boys came to the bar and they just pushed past me and my friend, like as if we were just not there. They just pushed past us. And we just looked at each other and was like, okay, you guys are very, very rude. Like, what is this? What's the vibe? We left it there. We didn't say anything. We're not going to let anyone, whether you're black, white, Asian, Hispanic, interrupt our evening. We're going to have a nice night out. So we left it. The next day we was out at the evening, similar group of people again, and we met this other guy who was really, really lovely that he was talking to. And then I noticed that he was talking to the guys that was rude the day before. So I said, oh my gosh, no way you're friends with them because you're so nice. And they were like really, really rude. And he was like, I'm not surprised because they don't like black girls. And I said, what do you mean? He was like, yeah, when they told me they were coming to this event, I was surprised. And I said to them, you know, there's going to be black girls, right? And I was like, so why are you friends with people that don't like black women? Because you're black yourself. And he was like, no, I'm not friends with them. I went to school with them. And through mutual friends, I knew they'll come in, but they don't like black girls. They're like, they only date white women. And they literally call black girls gollywogs.
Wow.
That word is not even a word of our time, of our generation.
Yeah.
So for you guys to really be using that, that's a different level of self-hate. And I was really just thinking, like, you actually look at me and think I'm a gollywog. One, when you have a child of a white woman and the child is mixed black. You know your child is also going to be the same gollywog that you're calling your brothers and sisters and your mum and your auntie. I just couldn't believe it. And I really wanted to go up to them and, like, have a conversation. And then I just thought to myself, like, these people don't even, they're not even worthy of that sort of time or energy.
Yeah, you have
but to know. But it just made sense why they pushed past us the day before.
Yeah, you have to know how to pick and choose your battles. Definitely not worth it. It's funny because I was just watching a Burna Boy interview where he was talking about how, like, black men have internalized this, like, self-loathing because they've always been told that they're not good enough and they aspire to whiteness by marrying and dating white women and rejecting black women as a way of, like, advancing their own way of, like, being better than what they think they are, how they've internalized being told all to, you know, throughout history that they're less than or that they're not attractive or whatever mm-hmm. it is. And I guess they've passed us on to black women. It's a good question, actually. Do you think you can be pro-black and still date outside of your race?
I would say that you can be, but I imagine it would be incredibly challenging. If someone identifies as pro-black and they're like, we're all for the black power, they do everything within their blackness, I don't know how it would work. Like, the views that you have and then go into your partner's house at Christmas or at holiday celebrations and then the mum accidentally calling you a nigger. Like, obviously, I'm being extreme. Like, not all white people are racist.
No, but that happens.
But in terms of, like, the microaggressions and stuff, like, you're just continuously fighting the fight.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like that happens. Like, I know, I have black girlfriends that are dating white men. And it's interesting because all of the girls that I know that are dating white men, their partners, I have to say, love them and treat them well and, you know, want them to express their blackness as much as humanly possible. It's actually interesting, and this is not, it is. I'm going to say it as plainly as I can. I find that when I know black men that are dating white women, those women are far less interested in being, like, self-aware and invested in black culture than white men are when they marry outside of their race into black families.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how to explain it yet, and this might sound very ignorant, and I'm not trying to offend anyone listening, but I do sometimes feel like when white women are with black men, they kind of feel like they've stolen the black men from the black woman, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like that's a rhetoric that I see a lot online, whereas when black women are with white men, they don't feel like that. They're just with white men.
Yeah, or it's because they've dated and feel like they've exhausted trying to date black men who hate black women.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's a tricky situation. I personally know this is just my personal boundary. Like, I choose to date within my race. If I were to meet a white man, and I have gone out on dates with white men, but nothing seriously. Like, I would never date somebody outside of my race seriously.
I'm not against it at all. I just know that the likelihood of that happening is like 0.00009% recurring.
Do white men try and chirp you in the streets?
No, not white men, but non-black men do.
Okay, like Asian men.
Yeah, or like North Africa. Like Moroccans, do you know what I mean? Like more like the spicy whites. It's more them.
The olive-skinned, tanned men.
Put it this way, being British Caribbean and then even dating someone who's Caribbean, there's a discrepancy there. Do you get what I mean? Being British Caribbean and dating someone who's African. And also, like, because I'm third generation British, the way that I've been brought up, the cultures that I've been brought around, the attitudes that I've been brought around are very different to people who are, like, first generation or, like, were born and bred back home. So I feel like I'm always going to be up against some sort of challenge or some sort of, like, difference I have to work towards, with even within my own race. So to then be put in another layer of, like, feeling like I've got to defend myself or police myself or tone down myself. And I'm not saying that's how all those women feel, because I have loads of people in my family that are in interracial relationships. Mm-hmm. And I know not neither of those partners feel like that. My great uncle, he's married a white lady, my Aunt Margaret, and I don't look at her any different to my Auntie Patsy or my Auntie Beverly. Do you get what I mean? Because she's the matriarch of that part of the family tree. She actually left her whole family to be with him.
Wow.
There's layers to interracial dating, I think, and relationships. I had someone else in our family before, and I remember the guy was telling me about black issues. Not to tell me as a Nike, educate me. He was talking about something and he raised it and he was like, but the other day I saw this and I saw that and I think this and I think that. And he was talking about what he does to combat these issues. And I was like, rah, I don't even have these conversations with certain black men. And you're a white man coming to tell me about these issues. So I feel like I get why on the forefront it's easy for myself or others to be like, oh, I'll never date a white person or blah, blah, blah. And I also get why a lot of people would be very much against it. But I also think until we're in those situations of certain maybe anonymous in the group or people that we don't see represented online, on like TikTok, where it sometimes can be quite toxic, we don't actually have the full picture of what it's like. Do you get what I mean?
Do you remember that whole conversation about that whole issue with Kelechi and she went on this show? I can't remember the name of the show, but it was like a conversation where they talked about different black issues and she was commenting on interracial dating and the producer came on and like was basically like, I'm sorry, I don't agree with interracial dating. And it later came out because I guess Kelechi's not particularly public about her relationship, is that she is, and actually I think now has a kid with a Polish guy, and she wrote this long article about, you know, his awareness and his capacity to like kind of recognize her struggle because of his own struggle as an Eastern European person. And just like the similarities that I guess she never and others might not have anticipated when you're dating outside of your race. So I guess, and she's as pro-black as they come, right? So
I think she's a really good example actually. And I don't remember that incident, but I know a lot of people have spoken about her and their opinions on her being pro-black and the work that she does. But I just think objectively, outward looking in, Kelechi is someone who fights the fight. She's at the front of causes to do with black issues. She's on the news. Like sometimes I look at the work that she's doing and I'm like, sis, are you tired? Like, are you okay? Who's checking in on your own mental health and well-being? So I just think you have to really lack sense to think that this person who does this exhausting work all the time is going to be with someone and lay down with someone who's going to trigger her in that way. Do you get what I mean? Yeah, I think the internet is a toxic place, as we know. And people like to just say things to berate someone or get at them. Kelechi, I think she's in a very admirable person. And there's people that probably watch her and they're like, I can't articulate myself as well as her. I don't have any as much followers as well as her. And then because of that, they just find ways to tear her down.
Dude, when she's talking and she does her like little rants when she's walking or running down the street or whatever it is when she's exercising, I could never, like, the way she articulates herself so seamlessly is just, it's amazing. I'm in awe of her all the time because she just does so much. And, you know, if the white man is keeping her happy at home, then so be it.
Honestly. But let's get into the questions. Do you think I'm sexually satisfied? Why or why not?
I don't know if I can answer that question, like, presently, whether you're satisfied. I'm going to go ahead and say that you're kind of neither here nor there about it because you're kind of in a different space mentally. But when we first met, you were definitely not sexually satisfied. Many, many, many moons ago, Shan admitted that she had never had an orgasm. She had never had an orgasm, and she also did not own any sex toys.
I guess you bought me my first one.
Subsequent to that, I did buy Shan her first one.
Actually, no, it wasn't my first one. It was the first one that I used.
Okay.
But my second toy, yeah.
Oh, no, because your nan bought you the first one.
Yeah. But it was the first one that I used, and I actually lost it in a hotel, yeah. I don't know if I ever told you this. I actually lost it in a hotel.
What?
And I called the hotel when I left and I was like, hi, excuse me, I've lost something. And they're like, what? And I'm like, my toy. And they're like, what do you mean you've lost your toy? And I'm like, I left my toy in the hotel room. And they're like, can you describe the toy? And I was like, it's purple and it's like a wand. It's an adult toy. And the lady was like, oh. She goes, yeah, if we had found that, I would have called you by now. We definitely don't have that toy. And I was like, well, the maid is a thief then, because I definitely left it.
Yeah, because who's stealing your vibrator? That makes no sense.
And that was wicked, you know. I honestly, I haven't even bought it back since then because I said my heart needs to just... No, it was amazing. It was good. But on the note of toys, though, yeah, shout out Jay Jouet. I feel like they are Black-owned and they sent us toys back 2 years ago. And I love their toys. Their toys are amazing.
I didn't get any of those toys. Where were those? But, like, I have girlfriends. I think I gifted everybody the wand at the same time. And I have a girlfriend whose battery died and for some reason it wouldn't recharge. So, no, she bought herself two just in case, like, one is dead and she needs another backup. And I can't tell you how many times I've been, you know, ready to have an evening alone and the wand is dead and I need to like wait to recharge it. It's very annoying.
Do you know Scotty? Yeah. Scotty Unfamous, the British sex influencer. She put a post up about this the other day and it was like a meme about, oh, when you're getting ready to have sexy time with yourself and then your toy is dead. And I was like, in the comments, like, but I will charge it and wait. And everyone was replying back to me, like, would you really wait? And I'm like, absolutely. Yes, I would charge it. Go for a walk, go for a jog. Put something to eat. Sometimes, if I really need to, I'll charge it for 5 minutes and use it.
Dude.
And then put it back.
I do that all the time. I literally will charge it for like a minute because it charges really quickly, FYI, for anybody who's interested. Mm-hmm. And then you just do what you gotta do.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Okay, that was a very easy and quick first question. I mean, was I correct?
I would say you are. Like, right now, there's nothing going on. I think because I went through a phase, which I needed to go through in regards to, like, connecting with my body, you know, becoming one, pleasing myself. And then I feel like it became too much as part of my routine. So I feel like I've been hyper aware of that now so that I cannot be using it or using a toy as much. So now I'm just chilling, focusing more on the Bible and the word, you know, the sermons. Because I'm not going to lie, when you use your toy, you use it at nighttime most of the time, yeah? And yeah, there's a weird uncomfortability of using my toy and then doing a prayer before bed. You just For me, it's just not the one. So one of them had to go and it was the toy.
God created sex and he wanted you to, you know, made it pleasurable for a reason. I don't think he
wanted to masturbate. I don't think he did.
Do you know what's so funny? I remember when we had sex ed in high school. Did you guys have sex ed in high school?
It's terrible here. Basically, no. Okay.
Well, our sex ed was by a Catholic priest. And he was basically like, this is how priests who abstain from sex get by. Like, we...
Really?
And he was like, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. He was like, you don't want your thoughts to become such that are deviant, but he's like, I masturbate all the time. So I was like, okay, cool. I mean,
some people say the Bible is up to self-interpretation, isn't it? But I spoke to my friend who's like trained as a pastor about like masturbation and about porn and things like that, and he referred me to a scripture, and when I read it, I understood why there's like the conflicting thing. But I also feel like when it comes to things that could be classed as sin or whatever, you have to take it to God. Do you get what I mean? There's certain things that I'll be convicted for that you might not be. I wasn't in a season of being convicted for that, so I was just doing my own thing. But I feel like where I've read that scripture and I'm like, actually, I do kind of see it in that way. I've just taken a break so I can have an understanding for myself and then whatever. But it's also just not good to use like all the time either.
For sure. I mean, I was going to say, actually, I have a girlfriend. Actually, she's not a girlfriend. She's a former work colleague who is like a sex positivity expert. So she sells toys through, like, she gets paid to sell toys from different companies and stuff like that as part of her work. And she was basically saying you should always alternate between a vibrator and a glass dildo as opposed to, I guess, a plastic one. She was like,
I wouldn't use a dildo at all, you know.
Me neither. I've never used one before. However, she was just like, the vibration can sometimes oversensitive, make your...
it can desensitize your clit.
Desensitize it or make it so super sensitive that like you can't actually even enjoy sex anymore because you just bust a nut immediately. So she was like, you should always alternate between like a penetrative toy, and she recommended glass dildos to me, although they're very expensive, and a vibrator. So I'm yet to take her up on that offer, but one day. What is your secret fear when it comes to finances? This is actually a really good question because you have a very, very, very strong sense of like financially managing yourself. So, yeah.
I would say my fear is, I don't know if it's a secret, but I guess I've never spoken about it out loud. I think my fear is being broke. I can't be there. No. I can't be there. I cannot be there. In September this year, I paused. I basically decided I wasn't going to pay one of my credit card, yeah.
Okay.
And like that broke me. I felt like I had failed at life. I was crying the entire day. My dad was looking at me like, "What is wrong with you? Why do you keep crying?" And I'm like, my headspace. And he's like, "What do you mean? Do you want a tablet? Like, what's wrong?" I'm like, I really attacked myself for an entire day. And it extended for a few days until I spoke to one of my friends about it. But it was essentially because I've never missed a payment since I was 16, ever in my life.
Wow.
I've always made sure my bills are paid on time. Most of my bills I even pay a month in advance. So I'm just very meticulous when it comes to that. So I feel like for me, the idea of being in like debt or being poor is something that I feel a bit uncomfortable about. And not to say that people would feel comfortable about being in debt or being poor. It's not that.
Some people don't care. Some people genuinely do not care about being in debt at all. Like, they live in their overdraft.
No, it's actually true. Because a lot of people... I was talking to someone the other day about someone I always see going on holiday and flying out and living bougie, yeah? And they were like, "But Shan, you know they're all on credit cards." They were like, they pay for these all on credit cards. So I think for me, I don't want to ever get to that. Do you know what I mean? I want to always make intentional decisions, but I think sometimes it's to my detriment because sometimes I focus so much on not being poor or not being financially limited that I don't enjoy the money that I have now that I've worked for now.
Mm.
I remember my dad's mom used to say to me, like, "You should spend your money. What are you going to do? Dive the money in your account and give it to who?" Sometimes when I'm saving, obviously I have saving goals, but also there needs to be a balance of saving and also spending because... Why are you going to work so hard just to live? You need to work so hard so you can thrive, so you can treat yourself, so you can do whatever you need to do. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, no, 100%. So I'm kind of like, if you're all the way on the left-hand side, I probably am somewhere in the center. So I also don't like the idea of not paying my bills. Always pay my bills on time, if not in advance. However, I'm not as good at saving as you are. So the surplus money that I do have, I will spend on things that I like fancy dinners or holidays. But I've never been one to like live in my overdraft, largely because like you, I'm afraid of going broke. And I just feel like this immense sense of guilt if I don't pay my bills on time.
This is going to sound so mad to people listening. The only reason why I missed that payment is because I have a savings goal for this year that I refuse to not meet. And the savings goal is ridiculous. So in my head, I was like, I have the money and the resources to pay it, but I'd rather miss it and put it in my savings. Like, it went to my detriment. It didn't make any sense. And when I was talking to my friend, she was like, "You actually have an abundance of access and resources to pay the bill. You're choosing not to. And now you're angry at yourself because you didn't do it. But this is your decision." And I'm just like, no, it's actually true. I feel like when it comes to like money and our attitudes towards like money mindset and things like that, we have to really tap into where it comes from and how much it can control us. Because that was very silly. But also, it's like, even if I did miss one payment, I've been paying bills for 12 years. And I haven't missed one.
You'll always say like, "Oh, I don't have much money this month." But it's not because you're broke. It's because you're trying to meet a savings goal.
But I'm exhausted. I need to earn more money now. It's not every day save. Sometimes Gucci bag, other shoe.
Where do you think that mindset comes from?
I don't know, you know. I was thinking about this the other day because I wouldn't say I grew up and I felt like I was living in poverty or I was observing struggle or things like that. But I definitely know from listening to certain conversations, there was a period where my mum needed more support financially from my dad and maybe didn't have it at certain times. And largely that was because he was in and out of prison for a certain period. So I think that's kind of where it came to. Also, I learned in therapy that my trauma response is hyper-independency. And as a result of that, I know that a way to really be independent is to have financial freedom, whatever that looks like for you within your own means. So I kind of view financial literacy and the importance of it as a way to protect myself and keep myself safe, which links back to the trauma.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but we just wanted to say if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button.
Unapologetically Black.
What concerns you most when it comes to our relationship?
I don't know that there's anything that concerns me. I mean, obviously, we're in separate places, but I feel like we've done this before. And I guess I also personally have moved around so often and managed to maintain really strong bonds with people regardless of distance. So that part doesn't bother me. I always want to make sure, and I think this is why I was saying to you earlier that I can't wait for you to come home. And I feel like this is partially because we're both traveling, but we usually have a really good balance of like work-life balance. If that makes sense.
Even though that within our friendship.
Yeah, within our friendship. And so I'm constantly aware that without having the like physical meetups that we usually have, I want to make sure that we have, that we don't ever just talk about work, that we're balancing with like normal friendship conversations as well.
That's true, actually, because it's been a while since you've called each other just to be like, oh, let's talk, let's catch up.
Yeah, so I think that's something. And we're always intentional about our friendship, right? So that's just another intention that we have to set, know that our friendship is transitioning into different geographical spaces.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Do you have any concerns that we need to address, dear?
No. None that I think we need to address. I think, no. I guess, do I have concerns? Let me try and be honest. Do I have concerns about... Do you know what it is? I had a conversation with one of my close friends the other day about an experience I went through in primary school where I basically went to quite a white primary school, and I realised after the fact that a lot of my friends weren't really my friends. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And I think I was subconsciously aware of it at the time. And then after that, it made me always feel like, when I had certain friendships, is this person really my friend? And it made me doubt it for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it took me ages to become really settled. Like, no, these are actually my brethren. Like, these are actually my people. Like, you don't have to keep second guessing it. And something that's really important to me is like checking with my friends regularly and saying like, oh, you know, friendship check-in. Like, is there anything I should be doing more? Is there anything that's bothered you? Is there anything that's gone under the rug? And that is because I ultimately want to strengthen those relationships. I don't do that with everybody. I do it with, like, the closest five people in my life. However, probably part of it also comes from the reassurance that I need to, like, be like, oh, no, this person actually... They fuck with me heavy because of whatever. Like, we're in a good place because of whatever. And I think part of that issue, again, comes from... being in a place where, you know, and I think this is more of a childish thing, but you know, like when you're younger, you might say to your friend, like, oh, you might have an argument with your friend and say, like, oh, this happened. And then they'll start listing all these things that you did from 5 years ago, or 5 years is not even the right timing, but like 3 months ago, 2 months ago. And you're like, where the hell did this come from?
Like they're holding it up in their heart.
Yeah, I don't like that. It makes me feel really disingenuous. So I think for me, it's not a concern specific to you, but I think because I had that conversation with my friend recently, that's what came to my head just now. But I don't really feel like if any of the friendships I have, that's a concern I have for anyone. I feel like if I have to question the level of friendship I have with someone in my life, I probably would just not have them in there at all because I haven't got the time. What the hell?
Snip, snip, snip. Let's delete those friendships. Ooh, what is something that you're sexually attracted to that you're also afraid of?
Sexually attracted to but afraid of. Something that I am sexually attracted to but afraid of. The only thing I can think of is, this is going very deep into my business, Jesus Christ. You know, when I've had sex in the past, I've quite liked, I would say mild forms of BDSM, so like being choked, being tied, those sort of things. I'm saying being tied, I've never been tied in my life. but like that sort of restrictive, like being pinned down, I quite like that, yeah? But I was talking to someone the other day who has been through sexual trauma, which is something that I've experienced. And I was saying like, does that come from a healthy place? And it's something I haven't yet unpacked, but I feel like that's probably the only like thing I could potentially be afraid of. Like, am I tapping into something out of a place of trauma, or am I tapping into it because I like it?
Well, it's interesting. I read somewhere else, I can't remember where it was now, but I'm sure if you Google it, it will come up, that well over 50% of women fantasize about being restrained or violated in some way, shape, or form. And I think, one, there's probably, when you think of over 50% is a lot of women, but also you have to remember that one in four women, maybe one in three at this point in time, have been sexually assaulted at some point in time. Mm. Right? So it's either for me, because I enjoy that kind of stuff too, there's a balance between, one, it being a way of reconciling your own trauma. I think that's probably the truth for some of us. And two, it probably highlights the safe space that we have with particular partners. Because I'm sure you feel this way as well, but it's not everybody that I want to choke me. Or it's not everybody that I want to, like, hang me up.
Yeah.
And even within that, there are certain ways that explicitly I do not want to be tied up. Like, I don't want to be handcuffed. That's not something that I enjoy It is a trigger for me. But there are other things that I do enjoy. And I think it depends on the safe space that you and your partner create.
I definitely agree with you on that, because I feel like I've only really been, it's only with my ex-partner, I think, where I really branched out and, like, explored what sex actually means. Because I feel like we was really, really sexually compatible and was really open about sex, what it means for both of us. We had sex safe words, we would explore different things. So actually most of my sexual experience is really with him.
Okay, yeah, so exactly.
And that's someone that I felt really, really safe with, especially because I was going through therapy for that experience whilst being in a relationship with him. So I was actually working through it in real time with him.
Yeah.
And it was actually being with him where I realised, oh, this is something that definitely still affects me, because I was like having sex and then freezing, or like having sex and then stopping halfway through and being like, oh, I want to stop. How to have sex now is definitely not like that.
Well, I was going to say, what's it been like recently? But maybe that's too much information. Like, post this partner that you're talking about, like, what has sex been like since having that safe space? Because you haven't been in a relationship since, not like a long-term one. So do you feel like you're able to create safe spaces with other people, or is it something that you're still searching for?
I definitely think I can create it with other people, but I feel like sometimes part of the journey of healing from trauma is trusting your ability to have greater levels of discernment. And I think I make better decisions now. I'm like hyper aware of certain environments. And also I've just grown so much as a person. Like, that happened to me when I was like ages ago, maybe 10 years ago now. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? But I remember learning in therapy that sometimes when you go through certain stuff, you'll keep putting yourself in unsafe environments because the unsafe environment feels comfortable to you, because you align with being unsafe because of trauma.
Yeah.
And this is why I love therapy as well, because when you're told things like that, it gives you a hyper awareness that allows you to make better decisions. So I'm never going to be in an environment consciously or willingly where I feel like I'm unsafe. Even if I've got a doubt, I'm leaving. I'll find a way. And that's why, you know, girls, guys, everyone listening, you have your get vexed money. Because if you go somewhere and someone wants to switch up on you last minute, you, someone's character changes, you see a different side to someone, it doesn't matter if you're in Brighton and you live in Barbados, you have the money for the flat to go home. No, dude, for real.
I don't know if I ever told this story, but I once got invited to Florida, to Miami, for a Kizumba, like, festival conference. Kizumba is a kind of salsa. It's like largely found in the Congo, I think. Somewhere on the continent. I can't remember exactly where. No, not Congo. In any event, I went kind of only having met this person virtually. So not particularly smart. But, you know, sometimes when we're young and, you know, flying by the seat of our pants, we just do spontaneous things. And it actually wasn't that long ago. It was like right before COVID. Anyway, so I went and he picked me up from the airport. Seemingly nice guy, Caribbean guy. You know, he was like, oh, we have a hotel room. It's massive. You can sleep. We can sleep separately if you need to, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I was like, all right, let me see what this guy's working with. So we ended up spending the night together. And then the very next day, he was like, oh, my brother's coming into town and the hotel is fully booked. So he's going to sleep on the couch in the living room, in the suite that we were in. I immediately got on the phone, booked a ticket right back to England. And I was just like, I'm really sorry. I have to go. My sister needs me. She's all the way in Bahrain. I'm going to fly back to London and then fly to Bahrain. Needless to say, I got back. It was like the day before Carnival. I ended up going to Notting Hill for the first time. And then the guy saw pictures of me at Notting Hill Carnival like days later. And was like, I guess, how's your sister doing? Like, where, what happened there? And we never spoke ever again. But the point is that as soon as it happened and I felt even remotely uncomfortable, I didn't even wait on the brother to arrive because I was like, I'm not sleeping with two men in a hotel and I've never even met one of them and I barely know the other. So, yeah, always have your get vex money.
No, it's important. Tell me three moments that changed your life.
The most obvious one is my parents passing and that whole experience, not just them passing, but also, I don't know if I've ever told this story to you before. I'm sure I have. But both my parents were diagnosed with cancer on the same day. So I was like leaving the doctors with my dad, calling my brother, and he had just like coincidentally left the doctor's office with my mom. So both of us found out that each parent had cancer at the same time. And so then it changed my life for many reasons because I had to actively choose between which parent I was going to stay with. It created like waves between my relationship with each of my parents. It made my relationship with my dad, which was previously very, very, very tumultuous, a lot better. And it, you know, actually it made us a lot closer. Whereas my mom's illness, whereas before she was my best friend, it kind of made us grow apart because I feel like she was really resentful of my choice to stay with my dad, even though she had my brother and sister in the Cayman Islands as well. And also like it just hurt her, the type of cancer that she had, which ultimately spread to her brain, had serious impacts on like her temper and her memory and all of these other things. And so just taking care of them or the process of taking care of them, adding in the family dynamics, definitely changed who I was in some ways for the better, but in other ways for the worse. So, you know, it definitely made me put myself secondary because I had to put them first. And for after they died, it took me a long time to start putting myself first again. And so I guess the second thing that I would say changed my life is probably DVW, because it was a space where I was doing something that I wanted to do and it allowed me to put myself first while still servicing other people. So obviously what we do is, you know, obviously create spaces, create sisterhood, or empower people to become closer to each other and network with each other, Black women specifically, which is something that I had always felt like I wanted to do but didn't necessarily have the medium to do it. And in many ways, especially coming off of the heels of a very bad breakup, this was something that was just for me and not for anyone else, even though it ultimately benefited other people. So that would be the second thing. And, well, what would the third thing be? I mean, I guess it would be me going through the process of reconciling my own trauma and my own victimization. So a long time ago, I think we've, you know, you and I have discussed this. I was very young. And it's something that I immediately wanted to share and talk about and recognized very quickly that many people didn't want to listen and that there was really no recourse for me to seek support or justice or any other type of help in any way, shape, or form. Like the people in my family that I told, they didn't really respond in the way that I expected them to respond. And then the people who are my friends were like, well, what did you expect? Like you had this person waiting for too long, or, you know, he would have only, you had to give it up at some point in time. And so I think instead of, in recognizing that I had no room for support, I had to find the support for myself. And that's kind of what guided my entire career. I was just like, let me figure out how I can make sure that other women have support. And so from, you know, going into university, every single thing that I've done has been around the efforts of like understanding genders and how they interact, like how men and women interact, particularly in a sexual or in a romantic setting, and working around how to figure out how to make sure that women can get support through the system, but also through community. So I think I would say those are the three major moments of trauma that have changed my life. I should have picked something as joyous, but I mean, that's just the truth of it.
No, but I feel like for a lot of people it would be three big things like that in that way, because ultimately it's things that force you to be uncomfortable and things that force you to grow, isn't it?
Exactly.
If it was things that was easy, it's just going to be like your three favorite memories, your three highlights of your life. It's not going to be, there's not something that shifted you to change as a person. So that's why you remember that more. But I wanted to ask you, you know, the final point of like, you were referring to your sexual assault experience, yeah? And like feeling like you didn't really have the support from people you spoke to. Do you think that was because of the age that you were? Because I feel like I really relate to that myself as well. But I think as you were talking, I was thinking, well, why do we have this overlap in experiences? And part of me is like, maybe I didn't articulate it properly at the time, or wasn't transparent properly about what actually happened at the time. Or maybe because I was young, I'm talking to people who are also young, they didn't even know how to process it, because it's not till you get older that you realise like the impact that it actually has on someone. So what do you think it was like for you?
I think the very first person that I told, who was a family member, I was very detailed about what happened. Like, I was very explicit. And I think, one, they were probably going through their own thing at the same time, and probably just didn't have capacity to be there for me. But also, I think there's something to be said for it genuinely making people uncomfortable. Like, some people just don't want to talk about that kind of thing. I mean, historically, sexual violence or domestic violence, any kind of violence against women, is one of those things like, it's a private issue and you don't want to get involved. So, you know, people stay out of man and woman business, essentially. And so I think a lot of people, especially men in the Caribbean, and maybe that's true of other spaces as well, definitely true of the friends that I have that are from the continent as well, you just don't stay out of it. You know, it's somebody's brother that you're potentially sending to jail, or somebody's son, and women just aren't important enough for us to put that above anything else. And it's sad and it's really fucked up. But yeah, I just think that people prefer their own comfort rather than being uncomfortable in order to help somebody in that situation, because they have to reckon with their own behavior as well and what they may or may not have done in their own past history, especially men, to support or endorse that kind of behavior.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting and actually gives me a lot of food for thought. It'll probably be worth us exploring that conversation again on a separate episode, especially because I feel like I have questions I want to ask you and like opinions I want to share that I think require more of a trigger warning and more of a safe space around it rather than just like glossing over it.
For sure.
But yeah, guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you liked it and we'll see you in the next one.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend, relative, or even an enemy so we can help grow our audience and connect with more like-minded individuals.
Keep up to date with everything that's going on and check out our events using the link in our description.
Unapologetically Black.
When it comes to finding great deals on mobiles, we've gone beyond expectations at Currys. Maybe you want the latest Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 5. We've got all the latest models on the award-winning ID Mobile and Vodafone networks. Maybe you want a better deal. We've got deals on data, trade-ins, cashback and more. See for yourself at your local Currys in Tottenham Court Road. And if you want free next day delivery, look online at carphonewarehouse.com. Order before 8 p.m. for free next day delivery in most areas, subject to availability, excludes bank holidays.
The future is unpredictable at times, but the Open University are the experts in distance learning, allowing you to fit study around your life. What's more, you'll have support from dedicated tutors every step of the way. Now suddenly your possibilities are open. Search the Open University to find out more. The Open University. The future is open.
Ah, nothing better than a perfectly clean kitchen. But things always find a way to get a little messy. No point crying over spilt, well, anything. Hotpoint's new induction hob has a unique clean protect coating. Just wipe with water to clean. That's farewell food stains, adios halos, and ciao to harsh chemicals. Plus, it's 5 times more resistant to chipping. Finally, no extra protection needed. To learn more, visit hotpoint.co.uk. Hotpoint, your trusted partner at home. Claims against chipping are comparable to Hotpoint non-coated models. See website for details.